If you're looking for a podcast to deal, let me try that again. 3, 2, 1. If you're looking for a podcast to help you deal with the political overload of the discussion of who is too old to be president.
Oh, holy crap.
Of the United
States. You weren't
States.
Kidding about this, were you? Wow, you just really went there, didn't you?
But really, think about it.
I
they're both too old.
Well, but
on top of that, there's a couple of things to consider. First.
Oh, gosh.
First.
Yeah.
One of them has 91 indictments against. Felony indictments against.
That would be the only thing that
two,
would need to be thinking about. Really? Really?
Two. The second point is one of them has been found to be liable for sexual assault.
Again. Yeah.
Three. One.
Oh God.
Thinks the, and another point is, one thinks that Nikki Haley was responsible for security on January 6th, 2021.
Oh, this is not that podcast.
No, it isn't.
No.
Just some things to keep in mind.
Dude,
but no,
geez.
This is not that podcast. This is, however, comedy.
Oh, tragedy.
Marriage. Welcome to Comedy Tragedy Marriage.
Wow.
I promise that'll be the last politics on this episode.
You, please.
podcast where a longtime married couple takes turns each episode selecting a movie, TV show, or documentary to watch. We watch it together, and then we sit down and discuss why we liked it, loved it, or loathed it, and share that discussion with you. I am Stan the Movie Man. I occasionally review films at stanthemovieman.com. You can follow me on X, formerly known as Twitter.
X-Twit.
At Movie Man Stan. You can follow the podcast at CT Marriage. You can also follow me on Spoutable, Threads, and Blue Sky, all at Stan the Movie Man. If you have a question you'd like to ask us, or if you have a suggestion for something for us to watch and discuss on the podcast, just send us an email, comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also click the link in the description of this episode and leave us a voice message. Joining me, as always, is my significant other half.
Yeah, Maud the Simple Broad, and you know what? You can't follow me anywhere, and don't send me emails, because I don't read that stuff.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to be, like, followed, or liked, or rehashed,
you don't want to be poked, twit tagged,
or
hashtagged,
any of
or
that, hash, twit, whatever, none of that. Mess. I ain't got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Okay. This week it was my choice, and I selected the 2018 American crime comedy thriller directed by Paul Feig called A Simple Favor. It stars Anna Kendrick, Blake Lively, Henry Golding, Andrew Rannells, Linda Cardellini, Rupert Friend, Gene Smart, and more. It is the story of a small town vlogger by the name of Stephanie Smothers, who is played by Anna Kendrick. She posts videos on a platform that looks very similar to YouTube, sharing recipes or life hacks.
Crafty projects. She's a mommy blogger who looks about 12 herself.
Yes.
Until you see her with, like, she's 12 years old from her neck up, and then she's got this bod. I don't know how else to really say that without being vulgar.
Yeah, well, she does have a bod.
She's got a bod.
Yes. She lives in this sort of bedroom community outside of New York City.
I think they're in Connecticut.
Okay. She has her son goes to a preschool. He's about five,
His name is Miles.
and one of the people in his class is named Nikki, and his mother is Emily, who is played by the lovely and talented Blake Lively, and she is pure style. She wears Louboutin shoes. She drives a very fancy sports car.
She's a high-powered PR executive.
Their house is a very stylish something out of
Architectural
Architectural
Digest.
Digest. There's it has minimalist kind of look on the interior, except for a very graphic painting of her nude viewed from the
Way down below.
from like the floor up, and it's quite a sight. Stephanie's kind of sort of milk toasty. She's never been really exposed or terribly friendly with anybody like Emily. And she's constantly apologizing for things that she doesn't know or saying things that seems to annoy Emily. But Emily says, stop apologizing for things. Assert yourself. Be a person in this world and take what's yours and
Take up
things.
space.
Yes, take up space. The two boys have a play date over at Emily's house. The two women spend more and more time together.
Over really stiff cocktails.
Yes, a specific type of martini that Emily teaches Stephanie how to make. Emily is married to Sean, who teaches at a nearby college. He's also a published author, Stephanie has read Sean's book, but he hasn't published anything in a while. He's having a hard time finishing his next book, and Emily is very sort of like she picks at him about his inability to write because she only works at this PR job at a fashion house because he's not bringing in much money. And she wants him to write, but he's stuck or blocked or whatever.
Or screwing his teaching assistant.
Or that too.
Seems like that would unblock a person, but I don't know. I don't know about these things.
There's all this stuff. I mean, Emily does not want her picture taken. Stephanie takes her picture one day, and Emily orders her to delete it off her digital camera.
Like threatening her. Okay, I'm sorry.
She's constantly berating the people around her, including, her husband. Stephanie's husband and her half brother died in a car crash some years earlier. And Stephanie is sort of struggling financially because she had been living off of the life insurance, her husband's life insurance, while being a stay-home mom and doing her mommy vlog. But that money's starting to run out, and she's starting to wonder what's going to happen. But she's found this friend that is just somebody who's so very different from her and she learns things from Emily that help her to be more assertive in her life and to be more to just grab life and try to live it more fully. Now, one day, Emily asks Stephanie via phone call to do her a simple favor, and that is to pick up Nikki at school and have him spend the night, because Emily's husband is in London, where he's originally from.
Because
his mom broke her hip. And then she's going to be working very late. So Stephanie does that, no problem. She actually, likes helping out Emily, because normally it seems to be the other way around, at least as far as, you know, Emily teaching Stephanie things, not actually doing anything for her, but teaching her, again, this assertiveness. But once 2 days go by, Stephanie contacts Sean and says nobody at Emily's work knows where she is. They said she went to Miami, but you know, they don't know why, and they can't get a hold of her in Miami, and her phone goes straight to voicemail, and nobody can find anything about why she would have gone there. So the police get involved, and they start searching for her, and a body is found in a lake nowhere near Miami. It's actually found
in Michigan.
A lake in Michigan at a summer camp, summer Bible camp. And it seems like Emily has died, perhaps at her own hand. And on top of that, she has track marks on her arms and between her toes like she was a heroin user, which was sort of weird because she showed no signs of that. And questions begin to come up about Emily and
this other life.
And
this
entire other life. And then Sean and Stephanie begin to get closer as she helps out, you know, with the arrangements and taking care of Nikki and all of this. And then the stories that Emily told Stephanie about, their, you know, their, for instance, their, they, Stephanie, or rather Emily said that they had a threesome with that, PA, or TA rather, from the college. And Sean says, no, that never happened, that, Emily was a pathological liar. So, and other things he says that she lied about. So was there anything that Emily told Stephanie that was the truth?
Who do we believe?
Yes.
What is to be done? What is to be surmised about all of this strangeness?
And then other weird things begin to happen because Stephanie moves in with Sean and they begin a relationship.
Yeah, they do.
I don't want to give too much of it away because this movie's not that old. But there are some questions about Emily's death and if the person in the lake is actually Emily and if the person, you know, that Sean married
was
if anybody knew anything true about the about Emily. And everybody in this movie has got secrets, which is part of what makes it
Fun.
a mystery, and fun outside of the mystery. It is amusing. I wouldn't call it funny exactly, but there are moments when it is a lot of fun. For instance, there are fellow parents at the school who provide a fair amount of light moments, like Anthony or Andrew Rannells, as one of the parents at the school, along with Aparna and Anchara, and they say some very catty things, behind people's backs.
They're sort of like the bitchy Greek chorus.
Yeah, kinda.
Catty school moms. Stephanie is like the perfect little homemaker.
Yes.
She always volunteers to do multiple things for when they have like a classroom function. She's just that perfect little cute Martha Stewart-esque, but more approachable, more human, way more humble,
Yes.
and way younger and less thirst-trappy from the neck up.
Well, yes, at least at first.
At least at first. But she has layers to herself, and she would be the person you would least expect to have secrets, but she does.
She does.
Because, we've all got secrets, so.
Well, there is one thing in the film that I will mention, in that Emily and Stephanie are, before, of course, Emily goes missing, they're sitting on the couch sharing stories about themselves, and Emily has gotten Stephanie drunk on these very strong martinis. And she talks about how at the wake following her father's death, she met a brother she knew nothing about, a half brother.
Only half.
A half brother. And he showed up at the door for the wake, and he stayed at the house, and they were talking at night, that night, and they wound up kissing. And there's a word used that's like mother effer, except it's brother
Brother
effer.
Effer,
And
which is twisty and sick and wrong, but it's also hilarious
yes,
because I'm
especially for
just,
this character
yeah.
who seems to be so straight-laced and so pure.
Apparently, not so much.
Not so much. And that revelation plays a big part of what happens later on in her backstory, as we find out.
Yeah.
That part I won't ruin for
No.
you. But yeah, there are layers to all of these characters. Granted, Stephanie has layers like a newsletter, whereas Emily has layers like the Manhattan phone book back in the day when everybody was in the phone book.
I was going to say Stephen King novel, but that works too.
One of the door-stoppy ones, like It or
Yeah.
The Stand. But yeah, it's there's a lot going on, and you got to pay attention. Not that the movie drops any sort of clues or anything, really.
You just don't want to miss
You
anything.
don't want to miss anything. There's a whole side tangent where we investigate Emily's upbringing, and we meet her mother, played by Jean Smart.
Who steals every scene that she's ever in anything, even if she's there for like 90
Yes,
seconds.
especially just it's just a little tiny bit of business where she scratches her head and you can, it's clear she's wearing a wig.
Yeah.
And it's just funny.
I have a feeling that might have been ad-libbed.
Well, maybe. But you know, it is, I think, a very well put together mystery, and has a fantastic cast that is, for the most part, extraordinarily stylish, which is sort of a hallmark of a Paul Feig movie. It is populated with an enormously attractive cast. And, you know, Paul Feig, the man behind Bridesmaids.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. Which is somewhat more crude than this film. This one is far more stylish.
More crude and more, like, in your face.
Yeah. And he also did the female reboot of Ghostbusters, which was not well received. I enjoyed the film, but there were a lot of butthurt fanboys that, you know, did not like that it wasn't like a passing of the torch to a new generation of
Ghostbusters,
that fans. It was a reimagining of Ghostbusters, and the original surviving Ghostbusters were in the film briefly.
Like cameos?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
But they weren't their original characters.
And we can't have that.
Well, yes. So the fanboys were very unhappy about that. But he often makes films that have a very specific sort of high-end style to them, but he can also sort of get down in the muck a little bit when he needs to. But I mean, his filmography includes everything from this film, A Simple Favor, to the Peanuts movie that you and I went to see on vacation one year.
Yeah. Diverse.
Yeah. And he also directed a film starring Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn in a mother-daughter action comedy called Snatched.
Huh.
Which wasn't bad. Wasn't great, but it wasn't bad.
Also, haven't seen it. I don't watch stuff. Oh, and if anybody hears like a grinding sort of noise, it's because Maude is dealing with some fingernail situations. So.
Okay.
Well, you might hear it when you edit this thing, because I don't watch stuff and I don't edit this either. And you can't follow me and don't send me emails because I don't do that either.
Right.
I'm basically just sitting on the couch waiting to die.
Well, that sounds like a wonderful attitude towards life.
Dude, I love my couch. Have you met my couch?
I'm sort of banished from it.
My couch is my she shed.
Yeah.
Until I build my she shed.
She has stuff on the couch. So she sits on one end.
And the crapalanche is on the other end.
The crapalanche is on
books.
The other end.
It's books.
Mostly it's books. And then I'm in my recliner. Not that you care. So... So I'm obviously a fan of A Simple Favor. What do you think of the film?
It was lighter hearted than I expected. I was expecting a little bit more like dark noir sort of drama. And I was pleasantly surprised by the humor in it. And I was there for it from the beginning. And so I found it to be very entertaining. I did laugh out loud a few times, and some of the twisty secrets were like, oh, that's good that they did that there like that. So I liked it.
Yeah, Blake Lively, aside from just being a very attractive woman, is a surprisingly is surprisingly effective in the role as this sort of mean, edgy,
Yeah, she's kind of gritty. High-powered executive.
dark.
Brr.
Will do whatever is necessary to complete her goal.
And we learn over the course of the film when that got started and how and why. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a it, it I found the film to be incredibly entertaining. It did well at the box office on a $20 million budget. It made $97 million worldwide.
Okay. Not bad.
Not bad. It has an 84 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really? Okay, good.
And it has a 67 on Metacritic, which is marginally in the green zone. Generally favorable reviews. It got a B plus from audiences polled by CinemaScore, and Amy Nicholson of Variety wrote, "The film feels a lot like the Serge Gainsbourg number that Stephanie dances to in the kitchen. Jazzy, a little sleazy, and worth the cult following." There's some very entertaining music.
I was going to say the soundtrack is really interesting. A lot of it is, most of it is foreign language stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of French. I don't know if it's pop or I'm not sure what it would be classified as, but
Well, and from what era it is either, because some of it
yeah.
sounds like it could have been like 60s-ish Mad Men kind of French era
Yeah.
stuff. So I'm not really versed in that. In that genre of music, so I couldn't tell you where, when it is from, but a lot of it was French,
Yeah.
yes.
We streamed it on MGM Plus. I think it's a lot of fun. And I think we both suggested, what rating do you give A Simple Favor?
I would give it 5 lemony twist martinis.
Wow, that is impressive. You aren't real free with the fives.
Well, no, it's usually either 11T or meh.
Well, 11D, I just assume, is a 5.
11D is a 5, but
Yes.
it's an 11D.
Yeah.
And 11D is totally a thing.
I also give it a 5 or an 11D. 5 stars. It's a ton of fun. So again, if you subscribe to MGM Plus, it's available to stream there, and you can rent it from all the usual suspects. Have you been watching, listening to, or reading anything you would like to share?
Well, okay, you mentioned something about some boys being butt hurt, and
Okay.
there was this little sports ball thing over the weekend,
Yeah,
which
yeah.
totally disrupted my schedule on The Way Home, which is a Hallmark production, but I stream it next day on Peacock.
Peacock.
And this week there was no episode on Sunday night, actually on Hallmark, because I went looking because I was desperate. And then Monday, while Stan was at the gym, getting his flex on, I went looking for it on Peacock and it wasn't there either. And I'm like, doggone it. What, doggone it. What is the deal? And then I went online and actually looked at the schedule and there wasn't even one made for this week because there was this little sports ball thing happening. So I didn't get to watch my show because of sports ball. So I was a little bit put out by that. I finished Lessons in Chemistry, the debut novel by Bonnie Garmus. It was quite good. And the Apple TV series starring Brie Larson was also very good. There was an added storyline in the TV show that was not in the novel, but it was totally compatible with the novel's tone. So I approve of both messages and like them very much. The book is great. Put the book on hold at your, you know, neighborhood library, because you're not going to be able to just go in and check it out right away because everybody else wants to read it too. Now I'm looking for the author of another book that I'm reading right now. And so give me 1 second, Stan, vamp for a second. So
I am also looking up other places where you can stream A Simple Favor. And it appears it's also on Amazon Prime.
Okay. So I'm in the process of reading a devotional book called Soulful by a minister, mother, speaker based in Nashville named Farrell Mason. And in the course of reading this devotional book, Soulful, she mentions another book in one of the reflections that she writes, and it is called The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Wohlleben. And he is, I think he is a German author. The Hidden Life of Trees is nonfiction. It's very, if you're into plant life, botany, the forest, anything about trees that have either leaves or needles or cones or anything like that, this book is fascinating. And I'm surprised at the speed with which I'm plowing through it. We're recording this on a Tuesday night. I started it over the weekend and I'm more than halfway through. And that is with, you know, plowing through like science stuff. But it's very approachable. There's not a lot of really hard words in it or anything. It's very, it talks a lot about trees and the long-lived nature of them, and how trees, the crowns of trees sort of intertwine and intermingle and intersect with one another, and how trees' root systems intermingle and intertwine that same way, and how trees communicate with one another and communicate with other beings in the forest, making sounds and putting off different scents to either attract or repel certain other forest creatures. It's just like the whole ecosystem of the forest is coming alive for me in a way that I never really had given thought to before. And the next time I find myself in a place where I'm surrounded by a lot of trees, I will notice them and appreciate them in a whole new way, because the trees communicate with one another, and they communicate with fungi and with other, with like insects and things that all inhabit this whole other universe that we take for granted. And trees also feel pain, which is poignant and fascinating and beautiful to me, that we share the planet with these creatures who communicate. We just don't know how to listen to them. And people like Peter Wohlleben, he is a forester, and he has made his life of being surrounded and studying and nurturing the trees. And so people like him can help us to understand this universe that lives in the forest. It's hard to even come up with a word, but I'm really enjoying this book. I feel like I'm learning a lot, and it is It is a very life-affirming thing to read. So it's been great. If you're about the plant life or the trees or anything like that, and you're a little bit of a nerd, this would be a really good read. I highly recommend. Okay. And I highly recommend Soulful by Farrell Mason as well. It has been a wonderful book. It's another one of those devotional things that are meant to be like you read it a week at a time and you meditate on that thing throughout the week. And there's like a lot of the weekly activities involve a recipe. She's very big into cooking. Hospitality is one of her most beloved outreaches to her family and her community. Soulful, F-U-L-L, by Farrell Mason. Really, really good book. Also highly recommend.
Okay.
What about you?
Well, I only have one thing to talk about this week.
Well, go for it.
And that would be Blumhouse's Compendium of Horror, also on MGM Plus.
That sounds fun.
It is a look back at the history of horror in American cinema. That's pretty much what it focuses on. From the first, silent films all the way to the present.
So it actually is fun.
Well, yeah.
Well, and entertaining and interesting.
Well, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Because it takes a look at the trends in society that shaped horror.
Yes.
Whether it was the fear of, for instance, marijuana.
Oh, Reefer Madness.
Yes. Now, that isn't considered a horror film, although maybe at the time it was. But like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, he drank a concoction that turned him into a bee, you know, an animal, yeah. a creature.
A monster.
And then at some point in time back in the 30s, there was a fear that science would create all of these, super men or, you
mutants.
Know, well, maybe. And that's where you get Frankenstein's monster. About that time. Of course, it was based on Mary Shelley's novel.
Yeah.
But that you get that. Of course, the Universal Monsters were also obscenely profitable for the studio. Frankenstein, the Wolfman, the Invisible Man, the Mummy, and, of course, Dracula.
The Thing, Swamp Man, anything that,
well,
like
the,
that?
Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Thank you. That guy. I think
so,
I dated him.
Thought we weren't going to talk about that. Anyway.
Sorry.
There are trends, for instance, that maybe you don't think about, like the AIDS crisis when it was first discovered. Diseases that they did not understand, and that influenced the stories and the style of horror for a period of time. Or the Red Scare back in the 50s. Mm. That's where you get your invasion of the body snatchers. Various events in American culture led to all of these kinds of, different kinds of stories.
Well, art so that they could, life, so.
Yeah, so that they could get past, instead of telling a story of how, communists were going to come over here and take over our country, they made The Blob. Because it was this amorphous thing that would absorb you and make you part of it and grow bigger and bigger and bigger and become a bigger and bigger threat.
Mm.
I think it's six episodes. I got one more to go, but it's It's really been interesting so far. I've really enjoyed it.
I have a question.
Yes.
Did it talk at all about the rash of like disaster movies of the 70s?
No, because okay. That's not considered a horror movie.
Okay. All right.
It did go into the whole slasher phase.
I think I like heard part of that episode.
Yeah. The nameless, faceless, unstoppable slasher of, you know, Freddy Krueger from A Nightmare on Elm Street. And then Jason from Friday the 13th. Although in the first film, it wasn't Jason that was the killer. It was his mother. Spoiler alert.
Like Michael Myers.
And Michael Myers from the Halloween series. That also had some basis in society, but I cannot recall. Oh, it was serial killers. That was the basis for that.
That because, makes sense.
Because that was what is, you know, inappropriately referred to as the golden age of serial killers. And you had these people who were turning up dead and mutilated or whatever, and they were all a lot. Many of them were being killed by the same person. You had John Wayne Gacy with 33 bodies, and then just
Son of Sam.
Sam not so much, but Bundy, all of those guys. Who were very prolific at that time. They were at least in part responsible for the, and of course, Gein, or Gein, as he's called in this documentary, it led to Psycho and Leatherface and all of that. So sometimes it doesn't occur when the killer is caught. Sometimes it occurs decades later, but they are, responsible for the suggestion of the killer. So anyway,
again, art imitates life.
Blumhouse's Compendium of Horror. It is available for you to stream on MGM+. Do you have anything else, my love?
I don't think I do.
Okay. Well, that takes care of it for this episode of Comedy Tragedy Marriage. We appreciate you subscribing, rating, reviewing. If you would share us with your friends on social media. Nothing says love like sharing an episode of Comedy Tragedy Marriage with your friends and your loved ones.
And tomorrow is Valentine's Day.
Well, as we are recording this, yes, it is tomorrow. So if you would be so kind to give us a subscribe on Spotify, that really helps us out a lot. Or anywhere that you anywhere you
get
download
podcasts.
Your podcast, that really does us the most good, though, is on Spotify. If you have a suggestion for something for us to watch, send us what it is you think we should watch and why you think we should watch it. Send that to comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. Who knows, we might just discuss your suggestion on a future episode. And if you also want to send that to us via voice message, you can do that by clicking the link in the description of this episode.
It might start a fight.
It very well could.
I stepped on you. I'm sorry.
That's fine. That might start a fight too. I'm Stan the Movie Man. She's Maude the Movie Broad. Love you.
Love you.
And until next time. Later.